potatoes. Leningrad is silent under the snow. Wide empty avenues, trolley buses frozen to the tracks, snow piled on the metal seats. The bells of St. Isaac's Cathedral hang snow-capped under the bell tower cupola that gapes open to the sky like a fractured skull. The belfry ringer likely starved, or perhaps died under the rubble in a bombing. Or he might have stopped ringing because the bell sounded too hearty, well-fed, and it wasn't a sound fit for a starving city. People are eating mice, boiling the leather covers off of books, mixing wood shavings with snow to approximate food. The trees are all naked, stripped of bark. People are falling in the streets, hundreds of people a day. It's such a quiet death. The emaciated body falls off the sole onto the snow like shed skin. And meanwhile, in the basement of the Plant Institute, a man is guarding a treasury of potatoes. The man is slumped against the wall just below the boarded-up half-windows. Along the floor, rows of evenly spaced burlap bundles retreat into the hungry shadows of the room. This man had swaddled each bundle of potatoes himself 2 years ago, after exhuming these hundreds of earth-clotted tubers from the Institute's specimen fields just outside the city under artillery fire. Since then, he hasn't eaten a single one. The man is breathing shallowly, his thin wool coat pulled tight around him. In his right hand, he's clutching a wrench. His cheeks are concavities in his face. He's watching the full moon through the slats between the window boards and thinking how much it looks like a potato. His hunger is a subtraction. He has lost much because of it. His body, for one. His bones feel brittle and exposed. It hurts to sleep. He also has to admit that he's losing his memories, and that frightens him most. Many of his memories are now missing sections, or he can't remember their progression, or things happen in his memories that he dimly realizes hadn't occurred in real life. His memories are starving, too. He still remembers this. There were 30 of them at the Plant Institute at the start of the siege. Geobotanists, biogeographers, soil scientists, microclimatologists, barley minders, leguminous plant overseers. In January, the peanut specialist Kruken died at his writing table, pen still in hand, documenting the specimens to the last. Ina Zubina, head of the rice collection, starved surrounded by untouched bags of grains too precious to eat. Felix Yevtushenko, in charge of medicinal plants, also succumbed. Raskushkina, Bach, Strelach, many names consumed by the war. The man's life is now condensed to the darkness of the Institute, the rows of burlap sacks, the hollow booms of the bombing trembling through the walls. But there was another life before, he remembers in snatches. Dust motes and sunbeams cutting across a kitchen, a wife, taller than him, in a cotton housecoat, with a head full of curls held back by a tortoiseshell beret. And there was a child, born small and mewling. Her head fit perfectly in the palm of his hand. She was always hungry, reaching for her mother until her mother's nipples cracked and bled. The man tries to remember why the wife and child aren't in this basement with him. The memories are thin and uncooperative. The man sits up carefully. He peers towards the distant corner of the room where a small, dense shadow is watching him and his tuberous charges. The cats have all been eaten, so the rats have become bold. The man wishes there was some way to tell the rat in its own language that this building is a scientific treasury. If the rat understood, maybe it would stop attacking his potatoes. Ex situ conservation, thousands of fruit seeds, more than 1,000 types of strawberries alone, 600 apple varietals, incalculable value in germplasm samples, collected from 5 continents of 180 expeditions around the world, 370,000 types of seeds, hundreds of each seed. Rice, wheat, corn, beans, potatoes from all around the world. Potatoes, warm, rough-skinned tubers smelling of earth, of his grandmother's hands, all of them lined up in burlap bundles in this basement. 90% of what this building holds isn't preserved anywhere else on the planet. The man is a specialist in selection and systematization of potatoes. On his final expedition, 2 months before the war, he collected 3 varieties of rare edible spuds in Mongolia, gnarled little bushes clinging to the windblown steppes. They are now the last burlap bundles, 457, 458, and 459, 8th row. He knows every bundle intimately. His world is potatoes. In the delirium of hunger, everything is becoming a potato. His soul is a potato. His brain is a potato. His heart is most certainly a potato. He feels its dense bulk buried in his chest. In taunting dreams, he cuts the twine, throttling one of the sacks, and sinks his teeth into a gritty spud. Sometimes in his dreams, he's flying a bomber and drops load after load of potatoes on the city. He then forgets how to fly the plane, and it crashes in the old specimen fields outside the city. He stumbles out of the wreckage, and he's surrounded by potato plants, green leaves dusted with snow. He digs at the hard ground, but instead of clustered spuds at the root of the plant, he uncovers the pale face of his daughter. Her mouth is full of dirt. He wakes up in the darkness, gasping. The basement smells of sweet potato flesh. He has a hard time remembering why he needs to preserve the potatoes. It is important. He just doesn't remember why. Emaciated daylight slips through the hairline gaps between planks of plywood nailed over the windows. When the rat skitters into the light, the man heaves the wrench at it to keep it away. He's done this many times. He's so weak that the wrench is almost too heavy to wield, but this time, the wrench hits the rat and stuns it. It twitches on its side, nails scratching at the floorboards. A lucky throw. The man eats the rat raw. That rare feeling of having his mouth filled with food brings a memory back to him, the night he stole three potatoes. Smuggled starchy cotadins in his overcoat out of the institute for his daughter, because he couldn't bear the shadows pooling in her collarbones, the old woman lines around her mouth, the way he could see the skull behind her face. The hour-long walk home passed quickly, the potatoes lumpy and warm in his pockets. Soon he was standing in confusion in front of his home in winter twilight, supposing that in his hunger fugue he had simply wandered into the wrong courtyard. But no, this was where he lived, had lived. This pile of blackened rubble, twisted metal skeletons of stairwells reaching out of the ruins like crooked fingers. Vastanya Street, house 43, second entrance, fourth floor, apartment number 8. It looked like it had been bombed earlier that morning, probably not long after he left for the institute, while his wife and daughter were still asleep, too weak to heed the air raid sirens and find a bomb shelter. A thin coat of snow whitened the rubble. He started lifting snow off the stones off the pile, but there were so many of them, they were so heavy, and he was so weak. He sat down on a large concrete block, took off his hat. The wind was cold against his head. Someone came up to him, asked, "Comrade, do you have somewhere else to stay tonight?" At first he didn't understand the question, then he nodded. He stood up and walked the hour back to the institute along the frozen river, and returned the katahdins to their burlap sack. The man struggles to his feet, wipes his rat-bloodied fingers on the walls, stalks down the rows of burlap sacks. His daughter, with her serious gray eyes and hunger for stories, there's no one left to remember her but him. One thing his memory still resolutely clings to is the knowledge of each bundle of potatoes, their shapes and origins and varietals and purposes and potential crossbreeds. The man picks up the first burlap bag. In it are little agatas from north of Krasnodar, and to their pleasing roundness, the man attaches the memory of his daughter when she was learning to walk. He cradles lumpy Kennebec potatoes and extracts the memory of his daughter's first loose tooth. He holds up blue Peruvians, their bruise-colored flesh dense and waxy, and to these he attaches the memory of his daughter looking out the window of the trolley bus as sunspots chased each other across her hair. He holds the bundles one by one, runs his hands over their grooves and mounds like a blind man, and brings up every memory of his daughter. The wild curls of hair that no ribbon could contain, the way she always had runs in her wool stockings no matter how often his wife mended them, her love of dinosaurs, the crunch her small, sharp teeth made on a fresh spring radish, the way she called him Papa Shlepa, Papa Hat, because it rhymed, the way his daughter would pick her nose mindlessly, methodically, whenever she was immersed in a book, the way she looked so tiny and pale when she was in the hospital with mononucleosis when she was 3, her drawings of foxes, the way she loved the white enamel soup pod because it had gooseberries drawn in it, the way birds trusted her, but cats never seemed to. He works his way through the entire basement. He attaches every memory of her to the potatoes. For the rest of the siege, whenever he feels the memories of his daughter slipping away from him, he shuffles down the rows. He strokes the potatoes, holds them to his face, their individual curvatures and protuberances bringing life back to life. He sustains himself by eating the rare rat and the occasional potato that rots despite his care. He sustains himself by knowing he must keep the potatoes and his daughter's memories safe. He sustains himself by the thought that once the war is over, he will plant all of these potatoes, spread their cultivars until memories of his daughter are buried in the ground all over the country, bright green shoots reaching for the sun, for he supposes there must be peace one day again, and sun and potatoes. Years later, on an anniversary of the armistice, a Leningrad evening news station interviews the man, now white-haired and rotund, about the self-sacrifice of the scientists. He says all the correct patriotic things. We were preserving specimens for future generations, maintaining the scientific treasury of our country to rebuild the USSR into the great power it is today. Yes, we were hungry. No, it wasn't hard to keep from eating the plant collections. At the closing of the segment, they ask him whether he thinks they'll grow potatoes on the moon one day. Gagarin had recently orbited the Earth, and space feels open and welcoming. The man nods sagely, says into the microphone, "Why not? Anything is possible with sufficient innovation." What he doesn't say is, "Yes, potatoes on the moon, what an idea. My potato child, my brave daughter, what a view she will have, alive in tuberous roots on the moon, and wrinkled white blossoms reaching into the vast kindness of space." Thank you.